Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March 29, 2021. Some church leaders in Central Equatoria State call for a ceasefire. And three civilians were gunned down by a militia in Malakal town over the weekend. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some church leaders in Central Equatoria State are condemning continuous clashes between the South Sudan People's Defense Force and rebels of the National Salvation Front. Reverend Hilary Luate Adeba is the retired bishop of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan. He says EAE remains a battleground in the fight between the rebels of the National Salvation Front and the South Sudan government forces. Unknown number of families were displaced from their homes in Otogo Payam following the recent clashes. For VOA News, Daniel Martin Friday reports from EAE.
Eyewitnesses and officials say people were displaced from their homes in Otogo Payam following recent clashes between government forces and National Salvation Front rebels. Samuel Camus, executive chief of Ombasi Boma, who fled his village this past weekend, tells South Sudan in Focus, NAS and SSPDF forces have been battling each other in several villages since March the 17th. He says more villages under his area of control have fled to the bush in Otogo Payam.
They started their fight within the area and they looted civilian clothes, mattresses, goats, doors were broken into, and houses, our tools were set on fire. We ran because we are suffering and really don't know whether there is peace in this country or not.
Ross Jamba, another displaced villager, says she spent 3 days walking through the bush before reaching Ye town. Jamba says she lost all her personal belongings to the armed fighters.
I am too
sorry for this country and I don't know where this country is taking us. As a woman, all my belongings, including my uniforms which I used for work in the health centers and the church, were all taken. And if I talk, they would have killed or beat me up. My husband was beaten in my presence, and if these armed fighters are listening to our cry, we need peace.
Retired Bishop Hilary Luate Adeba of Ye Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan says fighting between government and NAS forces has forced half of the local population in Lata, Ombasi, and Mudeba to flee their homes and seek refuge in Ye town. He says other displaced people have fled to neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo.
People are running away because of danger. Heavy guns are being shot, people are being attacked, and we're very sorry that this thing goes on and goes on without stopping. Ye is like a battle place where you find a lot of clashes between the rebels and the government troops. Who is going to stop this? The effect of this war in western part of Ombasi Payam means, therefore, this year completely there is not going to be any farming activity there because the farmers are being displaced and they are running to Ye. Some are running to Congo. It means the place will be left empty, which means there will be famine.
Bishop Ercolano Lado Tombe of the Catholic Diocese of Ye says ordinary people in Ye are not feeling any benefits from the peace agreement due to the repeated clashes between government forces and NAS rebels.
Let what we say correspond to what we do. The action on the ground is not peace. It is a pity that people are just being tormented, being sent away. Guns are pointed at them. And we can see a lot of their goods loaded on vehicles coming to Ye town, especially from Ombasi side. Everything gone. The cattle, the goats, the chicken, the mattresses, the what? What kind of human beings are we? I wish there was a leader of these looters who should collect this thing and return back to the owner.
Ye River County Commissioner Egre Cyrus Kanyikwa accused National Salvation Front rebels of attacking SSPDF forces on Friday in the Ombasi area, which forced nearly 1,000 civilians to flee the area. He says calm has since returned to the area after.
There was clashes that happened and the heavy gun battle erupted. I'm calling upon the NAS rebels that they should honor the St. Isidio Rome secession of hostility agreement, which they signed for. I'm seeing that they're also dishonoring the Rome secession of hostility agreement by provoking a situation of conflict, subjecting the civilians to suffering, and forcing children to suffer. We want to take this opportunity to promise to the people that there is no more threat. Embassy is now safe. There is no more threat.
The head of the NAS rebels signed a cessation of hostilities agreement with the government in Rome. SSPDF Deputy Military Spokesman Brigadier General Santo Domich and National Salvation Front Spokesman Subasa Melmanans were unreachable by phone for comments on the matter. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Yei, Central Equatorial State.
Still on security matters, calm has returned to the Upper Nile State capital after a tribal militia killed 3 civilians over the weekend. South Sudan Army spokesperson Santo Domic says shooting started when the newly appointed governor of the state arrived in Malakal over the weekend. He says 3 other people were injured during the shooting. Some residents of Malakal town who spoke to VOA say a group of people attacked the convoy of the governor with stones, sticks, and gunfire, forcing residents to flee. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Bor.
Brigadier General Santo Domich, the acting South Sudan People's Defense Force a spokesperson, says most residents of Malakal town were out at the airport and on the streets to welcome newly appointed Upper Nile State Governor Buthok Ayang Anei when gunshots were fired.
As the governor touches down in Malakal Airport, the shooting erupted in the area of Malakia and Malakal Market. And during the shooting, 2 people were killed and 3 were wounded. And the attackers are not known. Who are they? They were unknown up to now. Our security, in collaboration with the local government in Malakal and the police, are trying to investigate the source of this attack.
Governor Anei's appointment has been a contentious issue between President Salva Kiir and the SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar. Machar had previously nominated General Johnson Olunj for the post, but the government rejected the nomination, citing security concerns. The move forced the SPLM-IO to replace Olunj with Anei, who will govern over the state, where repeated clashes have broken out between government and rebel forces. Domich says he doesn't think last weekend's violence in Malakal was related to the appointment of Anei as governor.
The primary information we have now, this is just a group of armed that have just started to shoot. They were not actually shooting at where the governor was, because the governor landed at the Malakal airport, and the shooting started in Malakia, and that's a big distance. People who are actually wounded are just civilians.
Upper Nile State Information Minister Luke Sadala Ding says the appointment of the new Malakal Municipality Mayor Nyang Francis Awog could have caused the chaos on Saturday.
For that reason, Mayor has not taken hope because some people in the state are not contented with his appointment. So what happened was like a bomb that sparked the underlying problem. The government has restored calm, and I thank the security organ for standing firm and containing the situation.
Some Malakal residents who witnessed the violence say a group of people intentionally attacked the convoy of the governor, especially civilians who had gone to celebrate the coming of the new governor using stones and sticks, which later escalated into gunfire. A Malakal town resident who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal says he was at Malakal airport when a jovial reception for the governor was marred by chaos.
There were some indicators that were not an activity of peaceful because going to Malakal.
Because citizens of Malakal refused to go for the reception. So when the governor arrived at the airport, the governor left immediately to the secretariat and followed by traditional dancers. From there, a group of people started attacking the dancers using stones, sticks.
The eyewitness at Malakal Airport says the fighting caused a lot of panic in the streets, forcing residents of the town to flee for their lives. He says some residents shut themselves indoors and lay on their bellies under beds, while others fled to the bush and are still missing. Malakal resident Garang Lual admits that some residents are not happy over appointments in the new state and local governments, which he says could have sparked the weekend fighting.
The civilian here were been opposing the appointment of the mayor. The people, especially the people in Malakal town, want the mayor to be elected from this community that is residing in Malakal. Since people have accepted the appointment of the governor from Shilluk, the same thing, they assume that secretary is also from Shilluk and mayor is from Shilluk. Which people are not happy about that. So they want the mayor to be appointed from the committee which are now available in Malakal. The Ngok Denka and Dongjol.
Army spokesperson Brigadier General Santo Domic says by Monday morning, calm had returned to their area and the people were going about their day-to-day lives. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Bor.
Some South Sudanese refugees are reacting to a recent decision by the Kenyan government to shut down Kakuma and Dadaab refugee camps. The refugees say if Kenya follows through its decision, South Sudanese refugees who feel it is unsafe to return home will be stranded. A senior officer with the UNHCR in Kenya says the refugee agency will continue to dialogue with the Kenyan authorities. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
Last week, Kenya ordered UNHCR to present a plan for shutting down the Kakuma and Dadaab refugee camps, which collectively host more than 500,000 people, over the next 2 weeks. Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i said there will be no room for negotiations. This is the second attempt by the Kenyan government to have the camps closed and refugees repatriated. 36-year-old Achaya Rebecca Loam, who resides in Kakuma, says she has lived at the refugee camp since 2001. She says she left South Sudan when her stepfather forced her to marry a man she did not love. Loam says she was suspended from her job due to the pandemic and wonders what UNHCR will do for hundreds of thousands of refugees in such a short period of time.
Do they have the budget for logistics and some other things? It's completely frustrating and we are just stuck. Like personally, I cannot say I'll be going back to Sudan soon because I came from there when my stepfather have arranged for my marriage. He took already dowry and forced me to join someone I've never met, someone I've never loved. And that's the reason why I escaped and came to Kenya since then.
A 24-year-old woman who also resides in Kakuma and spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals says she won't be able to finish school if the camps are shut down.
I have enrolled here in Kakuma, and going back to South Sudan, it will stop me from getting my studies. And also back in South Sudan, our county is in flood. There's no place to stay. Almost everywhere is water. In other counties, we don't have any place to stay in other counties.
Camp community leader, 37-year-old Peter Obaj, who also lives in Kakuma with his wife and two children, says he has lived in the camp since 1992. Obaj says he recently completed his studies at the camp. He is urging UNHCR to uphold the rights of refugees and come up with a workable solution to assist vulnerable refugees.
If the UNHCR of Kakuma does not respond well to the government of Kenya, they are leading us forward to international, so that the international will react on the suffering of refugees.
Glenn Jusness, the senior external relations officer at the UNHCR in Kenya, confirms the government has reached out to the organization with the intention of shutting down Kakuma and Dadaab camps. Jusnes says UNHCR officials will continue to talk to Kenyan authorities and explain they are concerned about closing the camps under such a short time frame during COVID-19 and will urge the Kenyan government to find solutions that protect refugees.
UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, is grateful to the people and government of Kenya for generously hosting refugees and asylum seekers for several decades and recognize the impact this generosity has had. UNHCR has been informed by the Kenyan authorities of their intention to close Dadaab and Kakuma refugee camps within a short time frame.
UNHCR says they are ready to support the Kenyan government in further strengthening the work that continues to find solutions that are orderly and respect the rights of refugees. In May 2016, Kenya announced its plans to close the world's largest refugee camp, Dadaab, saying it had been infiltrated by terrorist cells. In August of that year, some refugees who left Dadaab were stranded near the Somali border after authorities in Jubaland refused to receive them. In November 2016, the Kenyan government bowed to international pressure and said it will delay the closure of the camps. In February 2017, a Kenyan court said it will be unconstitutional for the government to close a sprawling refugee camp. 2 years later, Kenya ordered the closure of Dadaab refugee camp in the middle of the year. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, a Sudanese rebel group signs a declaration of principle agreement. Find out more after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The transitional government of Sudan and a faction of the SPLM North rebels signed a declaration of principle agreement over the weekend in Juba to pave way for the two sides to end years of conflict. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Hundreds of Sudanese in Juba clapped hands and ululated yesterday during the signing of the deal. Most of the onlookers came from the Nuba Mountains region, an area largely controlled by the Al-Hilu SPLM North faction. South Sudan President Salva Kiir looked on as General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, and SPLM North faction leader General Abdel Aziz Adam Al-Hilu signed the document in Juba. General Al-Hilu says the new deal clears the way for his group to resolve its long-standing differences with the transitional government of Sudan.
The declaration of principle is going to pave the way for the two delegations to negotiate and to discuss the substantive issues, political issues, humanitarian issues, security sector reform issues. So this is the value of this agreement of today on the declaration of principle.
The parties also agreed to drop the current Sudan Islamic State and agreed that no religion shall be imposed on anyone and that the state shall not adopt any official religion. Both sides agreed that the state shall be impartial in terms of religion and all matters of faith and conscience, adding the state shall guarantee and protect the freedom of religion of citizens, and those protections shall be enshrined in the country's constitution. Separation of religion and state has been one of the major demands of General Al-Hilu's rebel group. It was the major point of contention 6 months ago with the talks stalled. The parties also agreed that Sudan is racially, ethnically, religiously, and culturally a diverse state, and that therefore its diversity must be fully recognized and the question of national identity must be addressed. The two sides agreed that the regions of Sudan will manage their affairs through decentralization or federalism. Al Burhan says the New Delhi moves forward Sudan's efforts to restoring peace and stability across the country.
We think that this is the real beginning, the beginning of commitment of the transitional government which designs for change, the real change that will lead to peace with dignity, peace that is acceptable, the peace that puts Sudan for all citizens, a peace that stands for freedom.
Al Burhan says his government will work with the SPLM North faction to strengthen efforts to achieve lasting peace in the country.
We, the fighters, we know that our brothers have a case and they fought for that case. And it is today we think that we will be ready to implement this peace and we will fight for the protection of this peace because all of us believed that these are issues that needed to be addressed, issues that will unite Sudan.
David Beasley, executive director of the World Food Program, who served as one of the international observers at the signing of the deal, has called on the parties to remain committed to implementing the peace deal.
Peace is not made on paper. Peace is made in the heart. And these leaders have come together around the power of the heart. This spirit is a spirit that will carry forward South Sudan and Sudan into a great future.
Under Beasley's leadership, the World Food Program has been instrumental in facilitating some assistance of coordination on the efforts of the peace talks between the two parties. The talks were mediated under the auspices of the South Sudan President Salva Kiir. Speaking during the signing ceremony, Kiir reiterated his government's commitment to ensure that stability in Sudan is restored.
I want to thank all of you for coming today to come and witness what we were coming to sign. Let us continue to work for peace so that we bring on board Abdelwahid Mohamed Nour.
Before yesterday's signing of the Declaration of Principles, the talks were deadlocked since last August. Sudanese Prime Minister Mohamed Hamdok and General Al-Hilu tried to jumpstart the talks last September in Addis Ababa without success. The parties will resume face-to-face negotiations 3 weeks from now. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The Justice Party of Sudan says it hopes Sunday's agreement is another step towards achieving peace and national reconciliation in Sudan. Justice Party Vice President Boshara Guma says he hopes other groups who have not signed the agreement would do so.
We think it is a good agreement as the first step going forward to the comprehensive peace agreement in Sudan. And then finally, we hope we can make all the national conference how we can deal with our problems in Sudan.
There was an agreement signed last year between the Sudanese government and the other rebel groups. Why did it take this Numba Mountain group this long to sign this agreement?
I think they have their own opinions and they may be afraid about the past agreements which has been in the Sudan with the past government or regime. So maybe they have some points and they want to find how they can find some agreement about when we come to make a peace agreement, we really can be believe that can be implemented on the ground.
The agreement emphasizes religion, freedom of religion. Can you speak to that for me? And how would this make this new government different from the government of former President Bashir?
This problem, I see, my friend, it is not an issue because in Sudan, there is no fear. Everyone can have his own religion. There is no problem here. So therefore, now we as Justice Party, we make now a press conference about this point of this agreement. So we think the religion is here in Sudan. Everyone can get what he needed. But sometimes the politicians use this point as a tactics between them. So maybe they're kind of afraid about how it was at that time used in the political issues.
What does this mean now for Sudan in terms of moving forward?
I think it means it is a second step after the Juba peace agreement. I think now this point with Abdelaziz and we wait Abdelwahid to complete the comprehensive peace agreement in Sudan. And then we hope that all the Sudanese people, if they are politicians as parties or armed movement, armies group or whatever we talk about, they are now looking forward to the peace. And after that, we are trying to find a way, a solution, how we can make the comprehensive national conference to find a way, how we can make a solution for our problems, the chronic problems in Sudan.
The agreement was signed in Juba. How would you describe the role that South Sudan is playing, a country that has its own problem?
Yeah, you see, South Sudan and the Sudan now, they were one country. So the South Sudan, which is now playing the role of mediator for this peace agreement, they know well about each one problems, and they know well even personally for those leaders.
That's Bashara Guma, Vice President of the Justice Party of Sudan. He was speaking with James Batty from the capital, Khartoum. That's all we prepared for you this Monday. Let's know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from contracting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sani kangu bani mama,
maiki langu chuma.
Sani kangu bani mama,
maiki langu chuma.
Sani kangu bani baba,
maiki langu chuma.
Sani kangu bani baba,
maiki langu chuma.
Yamoto munumako,
maiki langu chuma.
Yamoto munumako,
maiki langu chuma.
Anakani bara, fitimia de mama, anakani bara.